You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at Sly'sOffice.com. Joining us now from the Nation and the Capital Times, it's John Nichols. John, how are you this morning?
I'm good.
You're good. Really? Yeah, are you really good? I mean,
I'm fine.
I mean, we see the swamp draining before our very eyes. I've never seen a swampland disappear. Maybe since the last time they built a Menards someplace in Wisconsin. It's a remarkable.
Well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, like, claims about swamps are often associated with fraud. They're going to sell you some swampland or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in that sense, you know, that this is probably an appropriate metaphor, although I'm not sure the draining is occurring as rapidly as you might suspect.
Mm.
Although, really, Sly, I have a question for you.
Did
you really think a billionaire populist was going to be more populist than billionaire?
Well, you know, billionaire populist is kind of like saying fat triathlete. They don't normally are not synonymous.
If you know, another metaphor there.
Well, yeah. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Do you know many billionaire real populists? Maybe George Charles.
No, I think it's very interesting because you know that famously Lincoln had a team of rivals. Kennedy had the best and the brightest, and Trump has some rich guys I know.
Well, let's talk about some of the... before we even get to Mittens Romney and the frog legs at the fancy French restaurant that I can't afford. By the way, you can get the sample platter. I did a little checking this morning. You can get the sample platter at that restaurant for $198.
And, you know, I was looking at those plates, and I don't think they were done with their meal, right? I mean, I think that those were pretty much what they got served.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not look like, you know, an order at Smokey's.
No. Didn't have a Smokies feel at all.
Yeah.
No. Well, and I'm sure that when Reince Priebus and Mitt Romney and Donald Trump were speaking at that restaurant on Manhattan's Upper West Side and some other Trump Tower, you think they were thinking about the retiree living in the UP that put a Trump sign out in front of their little cottage?
Yeah, I think they were thinking, I sure don't want to ever, you know, be anywhere near that guy.
So let's talk about...
It's very comfortable in those.
So let's talk about the hedge funder who was part of IndyMac, who is going to be part of the new Treasury Secretary. I have to be honest, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his name, but... He appears to have a strikingly less than progressive record as a former Goldman Sachs partner.
Always has. I don't know if you saw the Bloomberg article where, like, one of his college classmates recalled a moment in which the college classmate was rather well-to-do, and you know, this Mnuchin guy he's trying to get somebody to get the classmate to join some secret society.
Oh,
right?
Oh,
yeah. And the guy didn't want to do it. You know, he's getting all sorts of pressure on it, and the guy said to him, knowing that he was going to go into finance, he said, "You put the douche in fiduciary." It's actually in the Bloomberg report.
Didn't Donald Trump run against Hillary Clinton's ties to Wall Street?
Yeah, I guess. You know, but here's the question. Did this guy, you know, might this guy have been warped by some of those Hillary Clinton speeches?
Very interesting. I don't know. By the way, this Mnuchin, is that how you pronounce his name? Mnuchin?
Steven? Use M.
Okay.
The M.
He got the idea to invest in IndyMac when he saw TV news footage of panicked customers at ATMs during the economy collapsing.
I can take advantage of that.
Uh-huh.
But why would you? Why does this surprise you, Sly? I mean, the man we elected, well, we didn't really elect him. He lost the popular vote. But the man who's going to become president, you know, famously bet against the many times he's bet against the worker, the homeowner, the average American to make a buck. So, I mean, as he said in the debate, right, when accused of not paying his taxes, he's smart. You know, there's no evidence whatsoever that Donald Trump or the people around him think that doing good by people who might be suffering or in a tough place is a good idea, unless you can make a buck off it.
All right, so we have the Treasury Secretary picked.
Yeah.
Now let's take a look at the Commerce Secretary.
Another winner. who intriguingly enough, Sly, has a lot of ties to China. China.
What's that?
He has a lot of ties to China.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Mm. I thought Trump was going to crack down on China.
China. Well,
maybe the way he's going to do it is by hiring somebody who's like super invested in the race to the bottom.
So Wilbur, an interesting name. You don't hear the name Wilbur
not
frequently. The pig in Charlotte's Web's name was Wilbur. We had Wilbur on Mr. Ed. But Wilbur Ross Jr., a New York billionaire who scoops up companies like the Sago Mine in West Virginia.
Yeah, that there's no joke there.
No, the Sago Mine in West Virginia, where 12 miners were killed. And you read on and on and on about the 2004 Federal Mine Safety Act and Health Administration, 140 violations, blah, 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 blah. And then you look way at the very end here. It appears Mr. Ross, as a matter of fact, it doesn't just appear. Mr. Ross said he wasn't involved with Sago's day-to-day operations, but later admitted he knew about the violations and simply dismissed them. Now,
you know, they never are involved with the day-to-day operations when the mining disaster occurs.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a funny thing how suddenly the CEOs have something else on their agenda. But they don't have something else on their agenda when it comes to cashing the checks.
Oh,
right?
Lightning fast.
Making the money. They're good for that. They're very, I bet you if any money coming from the Sago mine, if that check had, you know, been like $2 short, Wilbur Ross would have been involved in the day-to-day
operations. Yeah.
But when it comes to actually protecting the people that make you the money, no, that's somebody else's business.
Okay, so.
And this is pure Trumpism. I mean, this is, once again, you're not getting somebody who seems unexpected or out of place. He fits very well.
All right.
With Trump.
Very little in-depth coverage. Everybody's following the drama about Kellyanne Conway and Mitt Romney versus Giuliani and everything. But, you know, these other picks are just a nightmare. And the one, I saw some poor woman saying that the Elaine Chao pick was actually the good pick. Excuse me? The Elaine Chao pick? This is the wife or whatever relationship she has with Mitch McConnell. This was the labor secretary under the Bush administration. Now, she's transportation secretary. Let me ask you, John, you're a student of history. During her tenure with the Bush administration, did she look out for workers' safety and rights?
Workers? Oh, no. I mean, they were meticulous in seeking to block workers from organizing. Remember the long struggle that we had as regards transportation safety personnel, right? So you have working class people who are really the front line in a lot of security at airports and places around the country, and yet the Bush administration did not want to give them any real ability, to make sure that they could bargain for, you know, good practices, for safety, for, you know, a fair pay, mm-hmm. you know, good hours so they can get enough rest to actually do this important work. So, yeah, no, there's no evidence of her as a particular enthusiast for workers. And another thing is, there's a lot of evidence that her approach to transportation has some flaws to it as well.
Really? No.
There have been some articles on that.
Oh, interesting. Well,
and, you know, but can I just, and I know we may move to these other folks, but I really want to suggest that this is kind of Trump at his most ingenious, I would argue. Mnuchin and Ross are, they're interesting picks. They're very flawed in a tremendous number of ways, but they're closer to Trump than they are, say, to Paul Ryan and to Mike Pence. That's a good thing, because anybody close to Ryan and Pence, you know, A, you have the combination of economic ignoramus trying to figure out how to make money for the campaign donors. So, you know, we'll see how these two play out. I'm not very hopeful about them. We'll see how the Secretary of State plays out. You might get Romney, and maybe that's slightly better than John Bolton or Rudy Giuliani. We'll see how that plays out. But what we know is this slide, and this is the big deal. The people that Donald Trump has put in charge of Health and Human Services and Medicare, Medicaid, you know, very kind of critical areas for all Americans, anybody who thinks they're going to make it to, you know, retirement in this country, or anybody who thinks they might get sick and might need some health care, right? The people they have put in charge are absolutely committed. They have long records of wanting to, you know, really go right after Medicaid, Medicare, ultimately, I would argue, Social Security. I mean, that's not debatable. That's not debatable. In fact, we even have, and to their immense credit, some members of the Senate saying that they will oppose, say, Price at HHS, precisely because they fear that if he goes in there, Medicaid, Medicare will be directly threatened. So that's profound stuff, straight on. You know, it's not speculation about what one of these billionaires is going to do as regards the economy. Although I think we're pretty safe to speculate. It's not speculation about what's going to happen with Secretary of State. We have an actual reality that Medicare and Medicaid are threatened. And I don't think our media is beginning to focus on correctly at the level they should.
Chris Hayes and Howard Dean were tackling it, and they had,
did a great job.
Yeah, they did a great job talking about it last night. Howard Dean's a little more optimistic than others in that this will be able to be stopped. He thinks there's going to be an immediate revolt, and when these members of the House of Representatives go back to their districts, they're going to be stopped. Now, I guess the question is, how much subterfuge and camouflage can they do to actually hide this from people as far as what they're actually doing?
Well, they haven't been very good at it in the past.
No.
And, you know, I mean, when Bush tried this, Ryan, you know, I think there's very little doubt that you know, anything that Paul Ryan backs as regards Medicare or Medicaid, the alarm bell goes off, right? You know, if he's for it, you know, there's somehow somebody on Wall Street's going to get rich, and somebody who's sick is going to get less health care.
Well, you know, some of this stuff that the House has been passing, but nobody's been paying attention because it had no chance of becoming law.
Yeah, and now that's sort of, remember, this is an old...
The dog caught the car now.
Well, it's an old story. You know, it's like, everybody's like, John Ashcroft, not everybody thought he was the sharpest lawyer in the world, and yet the second that, you know, the call came down for a Patriot Act, he had it, right? You know, just, whoa, man, put that thing together fast. Well, they didn't put it together fast. They went into the file of everything that every proposal that had been rejected as, you know, unworkable, untenable, unconstitutional, and they pulled it all together and said, well, we can pass this now.
Well, you know who blew the whistle on that? Oh, the late Bob Novak. He's like, oh, that's a wish list that the FBI and the CIA have had for years.
Right. And I think the same thing happens here. We know that Paul Ryan and Mike Pence and, you know, Tom Price, these people, they've been sitting around there for years trying to figure out a way to take this great pool of money that now goes to provide a lot of health care with very low administrative costs, very little profiteering, in a very functional way, right? Take that money and steer it over toward Wall Street. Steer it over toward the health insurance industry, right? You know, let people make a whole bunch of money, right? And then keep the rates at a level that you're going to make the average person pay more. So you can have this combination of, you know, federal dollars flowing, you know, via vouchers and things to the insurance companies and to, you know, investors, while ordinary people still are going to have to pay more out. So it's a terrible, terrible scheme that could only have been hatched by people looking to profit off the pain of sick folks, right? And it's always been rejected. Even Republicans, remember when Ryan came up with his plan initially?
Yeah, nobody wanted to touch it.
He couldn't get any support for it. Now, however, they're sliding the handful of people that were on board for these crazy ideas into positions of power. My sense is that they will move quickly. They will try to, you know, position it as part of restructuring or altering the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, I will give Chuck Schumer credit. I hope he sticks to this. He has said that, you know, the Democrats are going to have an absolute opposition to anything that's Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. If they do, and if Trump doesn't intervene and say no to Paul Ryan and Mike Pence, there is a chance that this fight could do a whole bunch of things. Like, I'll give you a very good, very tangible example. Could reelect Tammy Baldwin to the U.S. Senate. Right off the bat.
Well,
you know?
Right.
So I'll tell you, if she's running for reelection as a defender of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and her opponent is an extension, is like a Sean Duffy or somebody like that, a pure extension.
Right.
Right? We'll see an alteration of politics pretty quickly there.
You say Tammy Baldwin will have a good shot at reelection if this is the issue that's front and center. You really think that Donald Trump wants to be leading off his presidency with cutting Medicare or Medicaid?
Well, I don't, no. And I don't think he wants this to be seen as such. Why do you think, again, we'll go back, we've discussed this before, why do you think on the morning that these appointments, these picks for HHS and for, you know, critical role as regards Medicare and Medicaid, why do you think on the morning he did that, that he tweets about the flag, burning flag, something that, you know,
well,
came
he
out blue.
Listen. This
he doesn't want us paying attention.
This mastermind of democracy was watching Fox News, and it really got his hackles up.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Come on, it's like, you know, with all due respect, I think they've worked very, very hard to slide these appointments or these picks in amidst a lot of other things, the Romney dinner, you know, the other picks. And I think that they will do their very best to try and slide assaults on Medicare and Medicaid into, you know, what looks like a simple restructuring of, you know, the Affordable Care Act and stuff like that. I'm just telling you, this is stuff to be aware of upfront and very directly, because there's nothing they'd like better than to, you know, amidst a lot of chaos, a lot of people looking other ways, to slide through even the beginning pieces of voucherization, for instance, of Medicaid, which then can extend it toward Medicare. And remember, these programs, we don't need to go into a complicated description of all this, but anybody who's ever had a parent going into a nursing home or, you know, has really dealt with, you know, kind of a lot of the overlay of Medicaid and Medicare is going to find out there is a lot of interplay between them. So, you know, when you start to dismantle one, when you start to assault one, you potentially undermine the other. And because of that, I think stuff that might sound relatively benign to some folks could actually be devastating. I will tell you that if I was the Democrats in the Democratic Party, which I'm not, obviously, but if I was doing their strategy, I'd just go straight down this thing. Absolutely, you know, make it about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and don't let go. You do a lot of good for humanity, right? Right off the bat, it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. But B, I think politically, I mean, it really is the third rail. If Trump starts out with anything like this, I think he could be in very bad shape. And understand that he may not want to, but this is the absolute passionate desire of Paul Ryan and the people around him.
Here is Mitt Romney last night after his dinner of steak, frog legs, and some sort of garlic soup.
Like old times. I've had a wonderful evening with President-elect Trump. We have another discussion about affairs throughout the world, and these discussions I've had with him have been enlightening and interesting and engaging. I've enjoyed them very, very much. I was also very impressed by the remarks he made on his victory night. By the way, it's not easy winning. I know that myself. He did something I tried to do and was unsuccessful in accomplishing. He won the general election. And he continues with a message of inclusion and bringing people together. And his vision is something which obviously connected with the American people in a very powerful way. The last few weeks, he's been carrying out a transition effort. And I have to tell you, I've been impressed by what I've seen in the transition effort.
Isn't that touching?
But, you know, I was wondering why he kept talking as much. And I guess when you're eating crow, you have to really chew a lot. Because that was just painful. That was too awful. But I will tell you this. When I saw that, it made me think that he may be appointed Secretary of State.
Kind of looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, because he's not a stupid man.
He's a chameleon, but he's not a stupid
man. Not a stupid man. Why would you go out and clearly make yourself look absurd, right? And you know, like that you just sold your conscience for a $240 meal, you know, unless you expect that you're going to get you know, some kind of major appointment out of this thing. And frankly, for Romney, you know, people wonder, why would Romney do this? He was governor of Massachusetts a long time ago. And then he lost the Republican nomination for president. He lost as the Republican nominee for president twice. He ends up kind of finishing his career out as a political loser unless he gets some major appointment, right? It's sort of like John Kerry in a sense that you know, you may not get to be president, but if you get to be Secretary of State, that's actually a pretty big deal. And think about who our last, you know, who our Secretary of States have been, you know, in recent history, right? Hillary Clinton runs for president, gets beat, becomes Secretary of State. John Kerry ran for president, got beat, becomes Secretary of State. Here you have Romney. I think it's actually a very natural desire on his part. I understand his play here, except that, of course, he has clearly indicated an incredible lack of trust for Trump. And so,
only an incredible lack of trust, but also disagreement with him on foreign policy.
Passionate, yeah. And so you end up in a situation where if he's going to do this, he has to justify in his, to some extent maybe in his own mind, but certainly to Trump, that he's, you know, he's kind of come across, that he now is, you know, a company man. He's on board. He's not going to do any more of those conscience protests, no more of that standing up. Because, you know, the last thing a president wants in a Secretary of State is somebody who might, you know, at some point say, this is wrong, right? You know, that could be real problematic for Trump. And so I think that little performance out there in front of Trump Tower, I believe, was, you know, this painful, awful, expression of subservience.
Well, it was as painful and awkward as when Trump did the official endorsement of Romney back in 2012. There was nothing more.
No, it wasn't. Sorry. It wasn't. I mean, with all due respect, Romney still had kind of the upper hand there. I mean, he was getting the Trump endorsement. It was embarrassing. It did look bad. But Sly, the guy went and, like, posed for pictures eating frog's legs with Trump and then goes out and says what a great job Trump is doing, like a matter of months after he'd said that Trump is absolutely not someone who should be president. It's worse. This is, you know, when you're sort of plumbing the depths of American politics, right? I mean, this is there with Nixon saying you're not going to have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore.
Ooh, that bad?
Oh, yes, that bad. Yeah, come on. It will forever be the standard for when you say the equivalent of never mind.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for joining us on our podcast today.
Pleasure, my friend.
Slysoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.